Welcome to another episode of the Dublin Maker Podcast. I am your host, Vicky Toomey Lee, your friendly neighbourhood maker advocate from the Dublin Maker team. Dublin Maker is an annual family-friendly maker festival funded by Science Foundation Ireland. In this episode, we have Mary Plunkett from the National Print Museum. And Mary, welcome to our podcast, and thank you for joining us for a chat. And it's great. Can you tell the listeners about the National Print Museum and the Print Lab, and a little bit about yourself and what you do there?
Well, indeed. The National Print Museum is quite unique. It is the only one of its kind in Ireland. It is all about the history of printing. So we're going from letterpress printing, which is essentially the setting of individual pieces of metal type to compose a page and print from it. And this all dates to the 1450s when Johannes Gutenberg developed this method of casting type, where he could get individual characters, put them all into a case. So a number of developments all came about at the same time. He was able to do this casting. Putting it all into the case meant it could be reused. Previous to that, everything would have been entirely cast in a page or carved into a page, and it would, once the print had been done, this piece was no longer useful. So this was a revolutionary invention. So what we do is we show the significance of printing and its development in Ireland. From this time. So it kind of came to Ireland about 100 years later. And so when you enter the museum, we're in the Garrison Chapel in Beggar's Bush Barracks off Hallington Road in Dublin 4. It's a beautiful old chapel building. So it's kind of all in one large area. So you walk in and it's kind of, the museum is mostly set up like a 1960s print shop. So we have our, you have your composition area, you have your printing area, and you have your finishing area. And you're kind of brought through these pieces by a self-directed tour, or we have a number of guided tours with our fantastic tour guides. But when you enter the museum first, the very first thing on your left-hand side is a replica of the press that is most likely the sort of press that Gutenberg used. That was actually made as a prop for the filming of the Tudors.
Oh, cool.
And they very kindly donated it to us to the museum afterwards. And then it goes through to it kind of shows the evolution of the different presses and into hot metal casting, which came about around the end of the 19th century. And all of these things would have been the major technological advancements of their time. So it's really interesting to view it in that way. But Print Lab was this fabulous project that actually approached the museum, which was great. It was a Creative Europe funded project. It was a combination of four different groups throughout Europe. So it was led by Explora, which is the children's museum in Rome, with Neapolis, which is kind of an innovation center in Villanova y la Geltrú, just south of Barcelona. And then the other partner was Labora, which is a fabulous printing and papermaking and bookbinding and calligraphy center in Tallinn in Estonia. So the four of us all worked together. The idea was to marry letterpress printing, this, you know, quite old and traditional printing method, but marry it with the idea of something like a fab lab, and all aimed at children, with the idea that we'd come up with kids' workshops. And we'd all end up at the end of what was, I think, an 18-month project, end up with these little centres in our own spaces, these little kind of fab lab type spaces, little maker spaces that people could experiment with using some of the kind of new technologies married with letterpress mm-hmm. and print. So in the Print Museum, it ended up being this little spot we've called Print Lab. We've kind of put it into a little spot. It's a corner of the museum. It's all our gear is kind of in one big cupboard, and then we can kind of open it out and take everything out as we need to, and we kind of spread out around the place. Within the space, we also, this was Con's Corner. There's a lovely gentleman who donated a lot of his stuff to the museum, Con Devlin, and Con donated his stuff on the on the with the provision that he could still use it. So Con used to be in on a very regular basis, on a weekly basis, in using his Van der Cook and printing away in his press, and it was great. So we miss him terribly. He died a number of years ago now.
Was he the one giving the tour as well?
Once upon, you know, he might, if he happened to be there, he might have been in when somebody visited, yeah.
Because I remember I dropped in, it was an event there before I joined Double Maker, it was a number of years ago, and I remember a gentleman giving the wee tour, and you end up, you know, doing your own letterpress, your name at the end of it.
Oh, yeah,
it was so much fun, and I've forgotten the little tidbit about the tattooers. It was so cool, even just hearing it again. I think that is amazing. But yeah, I remember a gentleman bringing us around, kind of a tour, and talking us through, you know, what every little piece of equipment does and all the stories that are attached to it. Yeah,
another. I must say we're very lucky. Apart from the tour guides, the museum, in association with the City of Dublin Education Training Board, runs a course in cultural and heritage studies. So, which actually at the moment is recruiting for people. So if anybody is interested, do look up the website and have a look for it. But it's a course essentially in tour guiding with a number of other subjects attached. It's a very interesting year-long course. And so all the trainees actively do our tour guiding throughout the year. And they're great. So they do such fabulous, fabulous tours, and they really get into it and present it so well. But then, as well as them, we're blessed that we have this fantastic group of volunteers who are all the retired printers and compositors. I mean, the museum was set up by a group of ex-printers and compositors who saw that all these machines were essentially in the 1980s were just being thrown out. Mm-hmm. Everything was being evacuated. I mean, lithographic printing was already a big thing. It was coming into digital times and things like that, and just letterpress was being abandoned. But they saw that opportunity and saved a lot of stuff. So the museum is in its present form. The museum is in its present form since 1996. So it's brilliant, and it's all dependent on those printers and compositors keeping that material and seeing its worth. And showing the story and the significance of the history that it shows. So we have this fantastic group, the chapel, which is the traditional name for any group of printers and compositors kind of working in a place together. So the chapel all, they meet usually kind of once a month or so. I think they're all over 70 at this point. But they're a great bunch of guys. They're really good. They give us so much time. They're very supportive of the museum. And it's brilliant. So I mean, so it's very much a working museum. The guys come in and they run the hot metal machines. So you can come in and you can see the linotype working and casting its type. You can see the monotype in action.
It's fantastic, all those machines in the museum. Normally, when you go to a museum, things are just there to be looked at. This is looking, and you can still, and you know, if there is someone there who can use the machines, can actually show you how it works.
That's it. That's the idea.
It's fantastic, you know, having the practicality aspect of it. And what about yourself? You know, what do you do at the National Print Museum?
Well, I'm the education officer, so I suppose I'm looking after the program of events at the place, and also I suppose ensuring things like the tours and all are running correctly and how we want them to be. We do quite a significant amount of other work as well. We have outreach, we've had a number of different events, we have various different tours, we have primary school tours, secondary school tours, we've tours for large events, we have for larger groups, we have setups for corporate events if people choose to do that at the place. So we do workshops, so you can come and try your hand.
I keep missing them. I wanted to do the with the wood block one. I keep missing the wood block one.
Yeah, I know. They run a few times. We try to run everything a few times a year. And we have a fantastic group of artists and designers who run our courses for us. So like Dave Darcy of One Strong Arm does some of the letterpress ones, I do some of the others. We have Caroline Byrne does both lino printing and bookbinding. Ailish Murphy does beautiful bookbinding. Deborah Bowden does woodblock. So and then Sarah O'Dea will be doing calligraphy for us. So it's a lovely, there's a lovely kind of diverse range of different printmaking methods and related practices.
So you and Greta were at a Double Maker last year, But I know it was like super disappointing that we couldn't have it again this year and have you there. But we found it kind of very trying because of COVID-19 to engage with our communities, you know. So the po this podcast is part of us trying to engage with our maker community to, you know, like a virtual drop into people's different maker tents, I suppose, and having a good old chat. So we're bringing this to their earbuds instead. So I suppose it's the same for you and a lot of museums as well, who were closed for quite a long time. Tell us, like, what have you been up to? Like, I suppose during that period, everything is quite new and everything was disrupted, you know. So you were in charge of a lot of kind of the program of events, and a lot of these amazing kind of events are like in person, seeing these machines and seeing all these projects are on the hand. So has everything turned upside down and everyone is like, what are we going to do? How are we going to do this? And approach our community to show them that we're still doing stuff.
That's it. I know. So it's all ahead of us now, to say the truth. We're reopening from the week of the 20th. So it'll all be open then again, and we'll have everyone back in, we hope, in kind of smaller numbers and separated out. We're going to be, I think it'll be either exclusively booked or only a small amount of kind of drop-ins allowed in, whereas previously we would have just had people just turned up and pay as you come. That's it. Exactly, we have to, especially because our volunteers are, because the chapel are all of this cocooning age, we want to be especially careful of them. So we'll be kind of asking them to only come in, obviously, if they feel well enough and they're safe enough, you know, that they're happy to do so themselves. We'll be following social distancing throughout, even for ourselves within the museum. When we reopen now, our staff ourselves won't overlap all that much. We're going to be set, you know, we'll be still continuing to work from home and as well as work in the museum. So it'll be an interesting, different environment. But hopefully, I think people still get a sense of the place. We'll still we're adapting how we do things so that people can still, you'll still get your print to take away, and you'll still you won't be setting your own little piece of type with your name anymore. But you'll get a lovely print, and you'll still get a demo, and still get a little bit of interaction. We will be able to do face-to-face guided tours for an individual, kind of a household who come can have it, have a tour and things like that. So we'd be able to advertise that and set that up. As regards what we were all doing, but when we were closed, I suppose for ourselves, the doors of the place were closed, but we were all working from home. So yeah, we had literally just launched some of our courses and things like that for this period, and I think they would have all run at this point, you know. So it's so that's very disappointing that we had to cancel all those, and we were initially just postponing, you know, and you're waiting to see what happens, and then they all end up
Yeah, know
being
how you feel,
canceled as it
especially,
goes, you know.
especially you have to figure out, like, I think for us, the first, I don't know about you, but the first 2 months when the lockdown came officially from the government, there was just an information overload from everything, right from the government and then from the community itself, the organizers themselves, all the different initiatives start putting a lot of stuff online. I was completely overwhelmed personally from everything. I was just like swirling in information, and then we're trying to figure out how to do stuff to approach our community. So what I ended up doing was my job is to, talk to people and share information. So that's what I ended up doing, what I was able to do. Besides the ba in the background, like yourselves working from home, we still have a lot of administration stuff to do. So things just don't stop because of it. There's still lots of tidying up from, the previous years, and at least you have time to, not get bombarded by people walking to the office,
Well, that's it. Yeah, you don't have people coming through the doors, but yeah, I sure I went home with this pile of stuff saying, oh, this is great. I'll be able to read up on XYZ and everything, because I'm only in this job since last November. So I mean, I'm still getting up to speed very much on some policies and things like that, which I wouldn't have been familiar with before. And not a hope. I haven't got near any of it. It's just every week there's something new. Can you do this? Oh, okay.
I totally understand, like, as a my job as a maker advocate, I'm double maker, is makers in the name, so I felt like I had to make stuff as well. So, like, I was meant to go to the Berlin Maker Faire my very first time, and I was supposed to bring a project in April, And the idea came up in February when Jeffrey he said, "Oh, I'm going to Berlin Maker Faire. Would you like to come along?" I said, "Yes, I will." "Oh, hang on a minute. I don't have a project. What will I make like in a month or two?" So given when the lockdown came around and things were starting being cancelled, I decided to, even though the trip to Berlin was cancelled and the Maker Faire in the end was also officially cancelled, I decided to use that date to actually fulfill my my Maker Faire project anyway, just because I wanted to make it. And because I started on some smaller maker stuff. I'm kind of new into electronics, so a lot of this stuff is kind of experimental and trying things out, which is what it's all about, the discovery and the journey and being, you know, in this area of unknowns. So I created the project and I wrote an article on it as well, and then I gave a presentation, you know, as well on what I did to, I think it was a conference a few weeks ago, and try to keep myself busy. And with the whole you know, the face mask as well, I learned to use a sewing machine, which I never used before.
Oh, good for you.
So making fabric face masks, I was like, so I suppose so confident, I end up ordering, you know, nicer materials for it as well from fabric centers and things. So yeah, there was a whole period of, you know, you want to read up on stuff and learn stuff, and for me as a maker, I felt that I had to do it. But in the end, I said I was going to do it anyway, and this would be a good opportunity to learn some stuff. So many people in the maker community just doing so much stuff and putting them all online that I'm so overwhelmed and say, I'm not doing enough, I want to catch up. It's like the fear of missing out thing. You
there
know?
Is the fear of missing out. I know what you mean. Yeah, no, because I found from, I think, week two or three anyway, I think I started doing little, kind of just little print at home projects. So just filmed them very simply with my phone, just did what I could, and just did stamp making, did little, initially they were very much the same to kids, so I just was basically printing with my daughter. Yeah. So that's, so it's a bit of fun, because you see the little three-year-old fingers coming into the frame and stuff like that. I think one I was very lucky with, we were literally just sitting outside the back garden and she was doing a bit of painting, and I said, oh, have you ever done one of these cards? And we had some cards at home, and I took them out and I did the old, you know, you paint on one side and you do your butterfly, and did that with her, and just kind of, but filmed it while I was doing it. And it was brilliant. It was the quickest one I did in the entire time. It was just like, lovely, I filmed it, it's done. And I just spent a few minutes editing it, and it was all done in a short time. So it was great. So we did a few little bits like that. But I must say, I haven't had a moment to myself to do another one since. I think we got about five or six done in the end.
Yeah,
cool. But some simple little bookbinding ones and things like that. But just little demos that somebody might be able to try at home. One of the things we always do with the primary school classes, and we'll often do with kids as well when they come to the museum, and we do it as part of our outreach as well, is the printer's hat. The printer's hat was traditionally what
I saw the video on that. Yeah.
Oh, good.
It's so cool.
So traditionally it was done with a sheet of newspaper, and the printers did it in order to kind of protect their hair because there was so much stuff going around the place. So this is what they did at the start of every day. They made the printer's hat and they stuck it on their head. So we've this kind of simplified version based on an A3 sheet. So so we did a little printer's hat demo and then kind of challenged people to do theirs online and see how quickly they were, and it was great. It actually became this little competition between both staff and trainees and previous staff and stuff online. It was actually quite funny, and the absolute hands down was Greta, who was the education officer until only recently. But she was in that role for 7.5 years, and you could show the practice needed, because she had, everyone else was, you know, 50 seconds, 47 seconds. Greta did it something like 28.
What?
Yeah, just went bang, 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 done. It was
my goodness. It looks very simple, but still, you have to fold it. Even the folding
takes
time.
You have to get it right. Yeah, but it is. It's quite a simple fold, but you do have to get it right. But I know those have been fun, I must say. I've enjoyed doing those. And then what we did as well is that we did a number of pieces that I suppose we would mostly have really given out as printed pieces in the museum, again, for primary school tours or secondary school tours, or these would have been things available for different kids visiting. So we had a number of worksheets about the museum and about, you know, Gutenberg and different inventors associated with the different presses and different casting machines, little colouring in sheets, different things like that. there's a fabulous teacher's pack, which is a number of sheets, all a number of pages together, all going through the whole history of print and different things about it, that was usually sent out to primary school teachers ahead of them coming on the tour, so that they can use it in their classroom, or they can use it after, you know, they can use it coming into or after their visit. So we made all those available online as well, and just got them all up. So they're all up there now, which is great. So we kind of set about doing that very quickly. But I know what you mean. There's a bit of a, there was definitely a bit of an overload. And I remember I did the stamp making one with my daughter, and I had it all filmed. I just hadn't had a chance to do anything with it. And next thing, a friend of mine for another organization posted one, and it was like, oh my goodness, that's almost exactly the same as mine. Oh, I think we waited 2 weeks until we put ours up. And you realize, but you, no, you know, people aren't necessarily looking at the same. It won't make any difference, but all the same. It was funny. It was like, ah, she got there first.
But you did something in the National Drawing Day. I saw the videos, and that was really cool, where you got people to send in simple drawings and you 3D printed. And it's not just 3D printing the drawings, you actually did a print, you know, inked it. And
the idea is to print from the print.
So you end up like digital to making it physical to, and doing more physical stuff with it by making it inked paper. So it's gone from like, you know, high tech to sort of high tech to create the lower tech to print again, which is fantastic. That was a great idea. And I didn't know that it worked so well with the printed 3D model when you printed on, and you inked it and it printed out really well on paper.
It's really nice. I tell you what, the best really is if it's in the museum, is if we can actually use the printing presses of the museum, because they just get the nice pressure and everything works best. You could actually ink it up at home and kind of try it as a stamp, but similarly to kind of the metal or wood block that we would have traditionally, kind of it was PLA I was using for that, and I mean it is very stiff and dense, do you know the way, so there's no give in it, so it's not in any way like a squishy stamp that you might buy.
It's very brittle,
exactly. So I mean I think what you need then instead is softness of the other side. So often what I do with kids in the museum is we put a little piece of foam or either quite a little pack of paper underneath their top printed sheet, and then you could give it a little bit of a push and actually get a bit.
So it's like those pads for the rubber stamps. Squishy.
Yeah, you need that little bit of give just for it. Yeah, from one side or the other, has to have a little bit of a give just to.
But it just blew my mind, and I said, "Oh my god, that actually does work!" Because one of the projects I actually wanted to do. There's an open source project that you can print your own 3D print your own little printing press thing.
I have that in progress on my 3D printer at home. Yeah, I know, and I still haven't got back to it. It's lovely, isn't it? The open press project.
That's on my to-do list. And the thing at the time, I said, hang on a minute, I don't have the ink. It's like, darn it, if I have it all done, but I don't have the, and plus they asked for the inside of milk cartons, but our insides of our milk cartons don't have that silver foil in anymore.
I tell you what, that's only to make the plate. That's to make the plate to draw. Yeah. What do you call it? Sheet of acetate would do the same for you.
Okay. Yeah.
What he's doing there is dry point. If you use a sharp needle or something like that into something like acetate or like another similar plastic, that kind of thing. Or traditionally it's done with copper or aluminium or something like that.
Yeah.
You draw into it. What it actually happens is you're creating a burr, and the ink gets caught into that burr on the edge. So that's all what you want to create. So you can use anything like that, and then basically you polish up the whole surface and the ink just remains in those areas, and then you print. But so that's that's intaglio, so that would require, so you have to dampen your paper and you need your little bits of blanket or something either side of your little etching press. But it's a great project, isn't it? It's such a lovely idea.
And I knew you were the right person to ask, because of all people I can ask this, I only just thought of it now, saying, oh my god. The thing is, if you have access to a 3D printer, that you can do all this. And I know that like libraries are starting to open up, and some libraries have 3D printers as well. So it might be something that, you know, people in the community or even the libraries themselves can start And maybe I might find a link for that project and say if they can actually start working on a project like that, doing their own 3D printing press thing.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And,
our
people can do it at home. But if they don't have access to 3D printers, you know, they can use to go to public services, as I said, like libraries. And not every locale has a makerspace. Like here in Dublin, we have our Dublin makerspace, which is TOG. It's a really lovely project. And in my head, I said, how do I get, you know, again, for people who don't have access to technologies? And I said, thank goodness the libraries are starting to open up, and some of the more public institutions, maybe the local museums, and they probably have, you know, 3D printers as well. Because I know a lot of people wanted to create their own wee makerspaces, and it normally starts off with a 3D printer. So it'd be good for people to inquire as well. And of course, you know, you have your print lab as well. So, and you're already doing the project. But it's a good one for people to try and you know, something that is freely available, and then also just maybe a way to try and find what local facilities have access to the technology itself. Because it's the fun one to learn. Like if you've no idea about 3D printing, you know, this be a one way to start anyway, an actual end project that you can actually also physically do stuff with it, you know, printing stuff, and then you can actually get your hands dirty and do inking stuff. Ignore the 3D printer and just print stuff, you know.
From one form of print to another.
Just create your own designs and be creative and do whatever you want. So thanks for that. That was a good tip.
I know, definitely. A little piece of little bit of aluminium, or a little piece of a little sheet of acetate or something like that, works just as well. And just a nice sharp, a scribe is traditionally what you'd use there, but like any kind of nice sharp, strong needle, you'll get a go.
So with your the project that you did for the National Drawing, heading back to that again, like, would you be doing more of that in the future, or are you going to go back and do that as a National Drawing Day project?
I tell you what it was we actually did it last year for Drawing Day. That was our first time trying it. Print Lab just launched last February, 2019. So that was kind of one of our first projects, I think, with the 3D printer. Trying to get something, so it was kind of working it all out, just to guide you through the process very quickly. It's somebody does a drawing, ideally with kind of a thick marker and keeps it quite small. Ideally for your 3D print, if you want to avoid having to have a base on it or anything like that, you just have to make sure all the lines join so it's one item when it prints, or else you can set it up to have a little base when you go to print. So we were trying to keep it very simple in the museum, and it was literally a drop-in kind of workshop. So everyone did their little drawing, and then you take a photograph of it, up the contrast as much as you can, so you have this black line, save it as PDF or something similar, send it to yourself, and then you open it. Say if you happen to have Adobe Illustrator or something like that, would work lovely. There's free versions of that. Something called Inkscape is a free version, and you can find others as well. And basically what you do is bring it in, and trace it, it's literally a button on the within one of those programs called Trace, and it will then make it into a little vector file, and then from that you can take that file, export it as, I think it's an SVG, which can be read by Tinkercad. So Tinkercad can read the SVG, and now you've got it into kind of a makerspace type of platform. So now you can mess around with it in Tinkercad to get it where you need, and then in turn, our particular machine we have in the museum is a Silhouette Alta. I don't know if you come across this. It's this very basic, but comes straight out of the box 3D printer. Very small little area. It's just a 12-centimeter circle, actually, is what it prints on. So I have to use the Silhouette software in order to actually print then. So then I have to save it again and bring it into Silhouette. But that's the process. So it's quite straightforward. It's a little bit, there's a good few steps, but it's nothing elaborate. It's all quite simple. And and then you can kind of shape it, you know what I mean, get it to either size, your correct height. Because we were working in the museum and working to our presses, all type is 0.918 inches high, which is 23.3 millimeters. So, and that's the standard within Ireland, UK, USA, possibly I think Australia as well, I'm not sure. And then within Europe, there's various different heights. There's a number of different heights within Europe. I think at one point in history, I think there was like three different heights just in Italy. Wow. But there you go. But for us, anyway, we use 0.918 inches. So you could, in theory, print it to that height, Or what we actually do is we use a little piece of 18 millimeter MDF and we just print it to either 5 or 3 millimeters, depending whether we add a piece of card or something to it. And then we just stick it down, put it through the press, and you get your lovely print.
You make it sound so simple.
I know. But it's fun, yeah. So we did it in person last year, and then this year we were kind of debating what would we do for drawing day. And we kind of, because I had the 3D printer at home, it was kind of like, well, we could still kind of do our little print lab project. So that's what we decided. We'd do this kind of call out and ask people to send in their drawings instead. So and then do a little film instead. So the finished piece is your little film seeing it done. It was great. We got some lovely reactions.
I just thought it was a fantastic idea. I was just wondering, how did you actually get the picture? Like, the thing is, I'm not great at 3D printers. Even though last Christmas, myself and my husband spent a few days building our own 3D printer, I managed to get a big one. But that doesn't mean that I know how to, you know, create 3D models and things like that. Still, so I'm still kind of just importing, you know, ones that are already made. So I was trying to see like what did you do to, you know, from an image someone sent in to, you know, the process of actually getting it into a 3D model that a 3D printer can actually print. So thanks for, you know, going through the various steps.
Anything like that you can just kind of do as a vector, you're literally just extruding it up. Do you know what I mean? And it's the simplest thing, which you see for print is all you want. I mean, essentially you're only ever going to do that sort of thing. So for me, it's a very simple way to be able to use the 3D printer, because kind of anything we would do, you only want to have that kind of one surface on the top, if you know what I mean. So you're only ever extruding things. You're never worrying about different supports or anything else like that. It's usually just kind of.
So my other thing now is like I have to order my ink. So that's pretty cool. Like, do you have any kind of other plans in mind for the museum, or is it, you know, I know you're saying you're opening soon, and we kind of talked about, you know, the various different activities. Like, do you have any kind of it's summer time now, so it's summer camp season. So I'm assuming, as you say, that there's a lot of activities for kids. I noticed that, you know, museums are opening now and going into full swing. So, and there's going to be a lot of activities. So have you kind of, what plans do you have, I suppose, for the National Print Museum for this summer and right up to the rest of the year?
Well, we're going to have to, unfortunately, I think for a number of the summer camps and things like that, we don't have an outdoor space. So unfortunately, it's harder to be able to offer something like that. And within the space itself, unfortunately, I don't think we're in a position to be able to do something, including social distancing, as regards workshops and stuff like that. So the museum is currently being reconfigured a certain amount. We have a cafe on site as well, a fantastic cafe called Press. And so there's some logistics in making sure that visitors to our place and visitors to their place are still safe and don't overlap by accident, if you know what I mean. So there's had to be a little bit of reconfiguration and stuff like that done. So we actually were going to have a print lab summer camp. It had just been advertised. It was going to be in July. But unfortunately that had to be cancelled, and I don't think we're in a position to try and run it. I was wondering about that, whether we would, but I think unfortunately that some of the reconfigurations within the museum have kind of cut into our space, and we just physically won't have space for
you're gonna try and probably more aim towards more kind of online activities and trying.
Yeah, so we're gonna have to see what we can do. I've been we're small staff, so we can only do so much. So at the moment, so while I have plans with the number of different artists and stuff we have for workshops, so far I haven't actually been able to have proper sit down with them and work out how we can do stuff for later in the year, because every week there's a different funding application or something to be done to try and work things out. What we have been able to work out is two or three fabulous projects which we'll have for later in the year. We're working on what will be a primary school virtual tour. So kids will be able to visit the museum with their teachers from the comfort of their own classroom. Mm-hmm. Because with social distancing and everything, we wouldn't be able to have the large groups that we would normally have. Mm-hmm. We could usually accommodate up to about 55 primary school kids all come in, and they usually separate into three separate groups, and they look at composition, they look at printing, they look at finishing, they do their printer's hat making activity, mm-hmm. they all have a bit of time printing, and it's a very enjoyable kind of hour and a half or so that they usually come in and spend at the museum. And unfortunately, we just won't be able to do that. So at the moment, we're looking at and we're in the midst of funding applications to get that, hopefully get that all sorted in time for September. So instead, they'd be able to, we're lucky, we actually have a virtual map is already in existence. So mm-hmm. if you go onto the museum website, mm-hmm. you can actually take yourself through a virtual tour mm-hmm. of the museum. So the idea is to add to this with pieces specifically for the primary schools, and they'll be able to learn all the bits that they would usually get in person. And then the idea is, the plan is hopefully that would be followed by a Zoom call like this to the class, and then one of our tour guides would guide them through their printer's hat making activity, and they'd have a bit more one-on-one, a bit of time for questions and answers and things like that. We'll see how that could work. So that'll be, hopefully the plan is that will be launched in September. And
hopefully when the schools start back
up. Yeah, exactly. So hopefully we'll have that ready to go for then.
Yeah.
And then for, again, another thing that we would often do, kind of 4 or 5 times a year, is we would have a demo day.
Yeah.
And this is where we have the chapel come in and they run all the machines.
Yeah.
We also have this great group of skills transfer volunteers. And these are guys who came in. We did a project there over the last 18 months where 8 people... we'd over 60 applications actually, but it came down to 8 people at the end, and they've gone through some training in composition and on specific machines in the museum with the idea that they can be backup for the chapel.
Yeah.
So say we have this fantastic machine called the Shaw Pen Ruling Machine, mm-hmm. which is a number of different, what do you call them, a little brass nibs that actually drew the lines onto sheets of paper. So they were used for ledgers and things like this traditionally. Mm-hmm. And it looks like a huge big loom. It's an enormous big, I suppose it's not even a ruling machine. It's an enormous big machine.
Mm-hmm.
But we have one person who can run that, which is Don Kerrigan. But Don goes on his holidays and we have a demo day. And unfortunately, we don't have the show.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Now that we have this group of skills transfer guys, hopefully if it suits one of them to turn up on the day, they might be able to fill in, and they wouldn't have anything like Don's knowledge or anything like that, but they can physically run the machine and tell people a little bit about it.
Yeah.
And it's a means of passing on that information.
So important. I think that's what the museum is about, isn't it? Passing on knowledge.
Oh, very much so. I know education is very much at the forefront. It's explaining the significance of all these things, but it's also keeping the machines in order and passing on how they work, and also
trying to
educate people how to use them. Is great, and it's brilliant that we've been able to do that. So this is who'd usually run the demo days would be, obviously member staff would be in there too, but we'd have our chapel in, or we'd have some skills transfer volunteers in. Between numbers and everything, because there's been a demo day when I've been in, but there's been 15 of us in the place even before anybody, remember, the public has walked into the place. Do you know what I mean? And we're all in this one space.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do for demo day this year is for Culture Night, we're actually going to do a virtual demo day. So the museum won't actually be open to the public at the time, but we're going to have an event where people can will be kind of guided through the museum and can view it online instead.
Mm-hmm.
And so that'll be a means of actually getting the chapel and the public interacting and stuff like that.
Mm.
So that's they're kind of 2 projects we have in mind for the moment.
Huge.
Yeah, and then hopefully we'll either through virtual, or I'll have to work out the exact logistics as to whether we can physically do any workshops in space for adults, but if not, we'll definitely look at we have some plans for how we could do some virtual workshops later on in the year. So we'll again probably,
fingers crossed on that.
Yeah,
better news right from how things are happening, so we can all Yeah, so it's kind of a pity that, you know, it's nice to see it in virtual, but seeing the machines in person, I think if you've never been to the print museum before, you can't take in how big these machines, how intricate the mechanisms are. It's just amazing at the time, the technology involved in making all that work. And they're super, very heavy as well. So like, you just can't, I think, you know, having a picture in virtual, you just can't grasp, you know, how, I think they're industrialized these machines are.
Oh,
and also
really
dangerous,
are.
And also dangerous as well.
Oh, very
and that's
dangerous.
That's why you have to be very trained. You have to be trained to use these equipment.
That's it,
yeah,
exactly. And especially like the hot metal and stuff like that. Yeah, the linotype, which is just to explain, is a hot metal casting machine. So it's molten type metal, which is lead, tin, and antimony, and it's at something like 400 degrees. You know what I mean? In this pot sitting on the side of the machine, and then which is then injected into. As I said, the line of type, linotype, hence because it's a line of type. Mm-hmm. So it's an all-in-one machine that the operator would sit and type in each line as they want to, and when they're finished, hit return, and then it would go off and be cast, and it's casted that line, and then it pops out just beside them there. And but incredibly intricate machine, and known as referred to as the eighth wonder of the world, you know what I mean? And I think especially for, we've had events for, was it engineering week, yeah, where the engineers absolutely love the machine because, yeah, it's so intricate and really incredible.
And it was fantastic to hear that, you know, that like you have 60 people applying for your skills transfer, you know, position, and
was
you cut it down to eight. That was like, must be so hard, but it's amazing that so many people are interested, you know, in learning more about traditional print, because for me, just as a visitor, being able just to letter press print your on a piece of paper with your name on it, that was, I felt giddy afterwards.
Doing
that, it's something small, but it is, after going through, that's what I want, you know, people who've never been to National Print Museum, when you do open, people should go and actually see these physical machines, and you have a tour, and it's a really nice kind of step through back in time, seeing how people work in the print industry, and then in the end you get the piece of paper with, you know, the prints, and you did it yourself, you know, you put it together, you did it yourself. It's something small, but it made you giddy because it was like, it was just so nice, you know, after going through all that. And I think that is the joy of visiting and the museum that I got from it. You'd be just walking around looking underneath and above and just checking how everything works, you know. And if you're lucky enough, someone works the machines, they'll turn it and twizzle, and you go like, oh, how does that work? Oh my god, you know. So it's kind of fascinating. So I was just delighted to be able to, you know, to have that tour and have that joy, that experience. And and hopefully people get that a little bit of joy when they get to do some of the stuff at home as well virtually, but then looking forward to if they had a chance to visit the the museum. But yeah, it's been like it's been quite a disruptive period for all of us, and it's great to hear all kind of the plans the plans that you're doing for the program for upcoming, because I know it's quite hard. It's quite a challenge. So I'm very kind of in awe of everyone doing all this stuff, trying to, you know, as I said, engage and outreach to, you know, your own members, and also to the outer communities, and to as far as possible on what you're trying to do, and pass the message of, you know, this is what we're doing. You know, we want to showcase all these cool stuff, and plus, you know, you're doing some high tech things as well. So you haven't talked about a lot of the high tech stuff that you're doing in the print lab, as well.
Print lab, yeah. I suppose for us anyway, that then.
I suppose it's a good time to kind of start wrapping this up. Cool. And do you have anything to kind of announcements to before we sign off? So just about your programs and your when the National Print Museum will be open. So
we're opening from the week of the 20th, the 20th of July. So we are changing our hours very slightly. We're not going to be open on Mondays anymore. So our opening day will be the Tuesday the 21st. But we're opening just a little bit longer on the weekends now, which will be nice. And again, we're opening for members of the public. We're opening just a little bit later. So we were always 9 to 5, but instead we're going to be 10 to 4 just to enable some cleaning and stuff before and after people visit. So it's going to be 10 to 4 week, Monday to, sorry, excuse me, Tuesday to Friday, 10 to 4 Tuesday to Friday, and then 12 to 4 Saturdays and Sundays.
Okay.
And so that's from the 21st. And then from that date as well, we're actually going to have our exhibition, which was supposed to open just as lockdown all came in, just at the end of March, we were supposed to have an exhibition opening. We have three fantastic photographers who have all photographed the members of the chapel or different events in the museum over the last number of years. Mm-hmm. So that will be taking place. That will be up and available to view from that date. And then, as I say, Culture Night, we're hopefully going to have our virtual demo day available from that evening. And then also that night, we will have an event that people can actually physically come into the museum for, which is we have a launch of another exhibition, which is called Locked Up in Lockdown, which is a number of different, I'm sure you would have come across these online, a number of different designers who did fabulous artwork on behalf of different charities over time. So we're going to have Dave Darcy's lovely letterpress prints that was One Strong Arm. Annie Atkins did work. Mazer did a beautiful print. Mm-hmm. What else was there? And let me see who else. And I know Dan from Print as well are involved as well. So it's a fantastic, selection of the work that was done.
Is it the Creative COVID initiative?
Creative COVID.
I bought a print from them as well. A friend of mine, she had her artwork in there. I got it the other week, so it was amazing. So
we'll have that. We'll have that from Culture Night as well. We'll have that exhibition up.
Fantastic.
And then we'll see. Yeah. So keep an eye on the website and keep an eye on things, because obviously everything's in. There's still flux. Do you know what I mean? As we hear different things and stuff, but it should be great. Well, we're also delighted as well. We're going to be taking part in Fulch Ireland. I don't know if you've seen this recently. Have launched kind of a charter for people to sign up, so that you only get their tick if you've adhere to all their rules and everything like that. Mm-hmm. So we're signing up for that, as is the cafe beside us. So we'll all be getting our training now in the next few weeks as
Fantastic.
We open up.
Good luck with that. Actually, can you do a shout out of the website for people to visit?
The website is nationalprintmuseum.ie.
Yeah. And are you on social media as well?
We are. We're on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. I think Facebook, you just find us under National Print Museum. Twitter is at, I think it's Nat Print Museum, and NAT Print Museum, and Instagram is National Print Museum.
Thank you for your time and for having a chat, Mary. And thank you so
Thanks
much.
Thanks very much, Vicky. That was great.
And thank you for listening to this episode of the Dublin Maker podcast. We are on doublemaker.buzzsprout.com if you want to subscribe to our podcast. You can also find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Our website is www.doublemaker.ie. Take care, stay safe, and this is Figgy signing off from the Dublin Maker podcast.